You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the weekend, and thanks for kicking it off with me here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Friday, September 20th, we finally have some confirmed news this month for the Rockets, which it's about time. We're officially a week from Media Day, and then next Saturday, the 28th, is when training camp officially opens for the 2019-2020 NBA season. And now that we're basically just 1 week out, we're starting to get some confirmed news, some good, in the form of Friday morning. News broke first courtesy of Mark Stein of the New York Times. The Rockets have a deal with veteran defensive wing Thabo Sefolosha. He's in the fold. It's a one-year veterans minimum contract. He will be a part of the team really the entire season. It's a fully guaranteed deal, unlike some of the partial guarantees they've given out to the likes of Ben McLemore and Anthony Bennett earlier this offseason. Thabo looks like he is in the fold. Nene, the veteran center, he's still in the fold, but it's not as rosy of a picture as we thought a few days ago. We learned Thursday afternoon that the league, basically the NBA office in collaboration with the Players Association, jointly decided to void the enhanced trade value of that deal, effectively making it about $2.6 million, both in terms of the payout from the Rockets and what it would mean in terms of outgoing salary in trade. So that huge filler component, not there. We're going to talk about that on today's show and why, in my opinion, I think that's a mistake by the league office. And we'll also talk about what I thought was at least a somewhat revealing interview, a Q&A that Rockets GM Daryl Morey did with the Houston Chronicle. That was also published on Thursday, in which he said he was not expecting any other contract extensions to be handed out by the Rockets this year, referring mostly to forward PJ Tucker, who has said that he wants one, but also head coach Mike D'Antoni in a different part of the interview. We'll talk about that as we make our way through our usual three-part show. But as we lead off today, again, Friday, September 20th, I'm going to start with the most positive news because, well, it's just breaking, but it's also a need for the Rockets. Veteran forward Thabo Sefolosha now in the fold. And as far as what he can bring, we need to be realistic. Last season, he played 12 minutes per game with the Jazz. He's 35 years old now. So this is not something that radically transforms your outlook. There are limitations, and so we should be realistic about this. With that said, as far as a complimentary player, perhaps sliding into that role that Iman Shumpert had towards the end of last season against some teams, and certainly the Warriors in the playoffs, you could use that defense. He can still play. He's 6'7", he's long, he's rangy. That's something that the Rockets really don't have a ton of outside of Daniel House, and we heard from Mike D'Antoni in his most recent interview, the podcast with Craig Ackerman, that the Rockets need that athletic wing. Well, that's what Sefolosha can give you. Even at 35 years old, he's still got the bounce. He's certainly got the wingspan. And for a Rocket squad that tends to play small a lot, we saw Eric Gordon so often at the three last year, which took a toll on the rebounding relative to the formula from the year before when you had guys like Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute at the three spot. That's where Thabo can really help you. And this past year, he actually shot over 43% from behind the three-point arc, which is the second best figure of his career. I believe he's entering his 14th season. And even though he's a career 35% shooter, that's solid. Now, he's had a great three-point shooter historically, but it's not like he's bad. And with him being at 35% for his career, that's a big enough base to where maybe the 43, 44% that he shot last year is unsustainable, especially because he played just 50 games, 12 minutes per night. So it's a small sample. I believe he was 34 of 78. But it's not uncommon, even as guys age, you can improve your three-point shot. That's one aspect of your game that age is usually pretty friendly to, especially mid-30s. He's still got some bounce if you look at his highlights from last season with the Jazz. If with his defense, with his knowledge of the system. And when I say knowledge of the system, I'm talking about the experience that he has with James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Now, Thabo has not been a Rocket before, but when you consider that he played 3 years with James Harden in Oklahoma City and parts of 6 seasons with Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City, clearly he's got a rapport, a certain chemistry with those two guys. By the way, he's also born in Switzerland, so he's got a relationship with Clint Capela in that area as well. So there's definitely some connections, even though he hasn't been a Rocket. And in terms of the on-court impact, when you look at it relative to those Oklahoma City days that Thabo had with Westbrook and Harden, really extended time between 3 and 6 years, that's the kind of thing where even though he hasn't been in Houston before, we all know in the NBA, your system is typically your star players. You play to their strengths. So with Thabo having that prior experience with Harden and Westbrook, so that makes him a pretty easy day one fit to slide in, with him having a fairly unique skill set in regards to the length and the height in which he can play, certainly at the 3, but also the 4 spot in the Rockets system, there's a reason that this is a quality signing, and don't dismiss it just because it's the minimum. 2 years ago, Luke Bamute was a minimum signing, and look what he did. I'm not saying it's going to be quite to that extent, I think in part because Thabo at 35, I don't know if you could realistically expect him to go 20 to 25 minutes the way you could Luke 2 years ago. I just think physically that's probably asking a lot of a guy who's 35 years old and in his 14th year in the NBA. But as far as guys that are at the 10, 11, 12 spots on your bench, this is someone who, when you factor in the experience, the knowledge of the system, meaning Harden and Westbrook, the three-point shot being at least reliable, the 35% figure for his career is capable, and when you look at 43% last year, about 43.5 actually, it's a lot more than that. That's pretty solid at the end of your bench. That's something that clearly in certain matchups, the same way we saw them do with Iman Shumpert a season ago, there's value in that. And when you consider that the other options were guys like Corey Brewer, Nick Young, Thabo is one of the names that was reported to be with the Rockets for their mini camp, the unofficial one in Las Vegas this week. We've seen some videos of James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Eric Gordon, and then we learned that, and we discussed this on Wednesday's show with Roosh Williams, a few veterans would be joining them, the likes of Thabo, Corey Brewer, Nick Young. In terms of what the Rockets don't already have, Thabo checks the most boxes. That's why Roosh endorsed him, and I do as well, because when you look at Corey Brewer or Nick Young, look, they already have, the Rockets that is, guys who can shoot or guys that can get out in transition. They have energy guys. You already have a Gerald Green if you feel like you need that extra burst, that dose of energy, the shooting, whatever it may be. What you didn't have before the Thabo Sefolosha signing, other than Daniel House, was another guy with size that you could plug in at the forward spots and feel pretty comfortable about their ability to guard most of the NBA quality players at those positions. And even with House, he's coming off an uncertain and iffy playoff run. I know it was his first year. I know there was the contract dispute, which kind of took him out of rhythm. I know he had the foot injury in the playoffs. But House, even though we're optimistic about him, it's not like he has a very long track record of success in his own right. So I don't really see much downside at all to this signing. You certainly should keep expectations in check given his age, given the salary, those types of factors. But really, when you look at what the Rockets have targeted, especially since acquiring Russell Westbrook, we've seen over and over again, certainly the pursuit of Andre Iguodala, but the reason why they have gone after those types of players, and Iggy in particular, is because wing defense, especially with size, is the one hole that the Rockets clearly have in terms of building their roster. Now, will a 35-year-old Thabo Sefolosha completely fill that? I don't know about that, but as far as a stopgap to help get you through the grind of an 82-game season, I think he makes a lot of sense. As far as whether he's ready for a playoff rotation, of course, time will tell. We'll see how he looks on the floor. We'll see if the Rockets, if they make any other moves, say for an Iguodala or something like that during the season that might further upgrade that spot. But as far as starting the year and getting off to a better start than that 11-14 through 25 games that you did a year ago, which cost them seeding and ultimately played a role in their second round loss, sure, the Rockets want flexibility to make moves during the season, but they also want to be in better shape than they were a year ago when they had guys like Michael Carter-Williams, Carmelo Anthony, that in terms of the Rockets system and the way they like to play were basically fish out of water. a Tabo Cephalosha signing, even if you're not 100% sold that he's going to be in the playoff rotation, given his age and given the fact that offensively he's certainly not much of a creator or anything in that regard. He's basically just a corner three-point shooter, which for the Rockets, that bodes pretty well. Of course, that's a shot that they prioritize in their offense, but he's certainly not going to be thought of as a scorer at all. Averaged 3.8 points in about 12 minutes per game with the Jazz last year. It's nothing transformative, but with his defense, his IQ, his relationships with Harden and Westbrook, it's a solid signing that should avoid putting you in the dire straits you were in a year ago when you had these guys like MCW, like Melo, that were so clearly not fits for this system that played a role in their slow start. Of course, they eventually overcame it with signing guys like Austin Rivers and Daniel House during the season, but ultimately that slow start took a toll. That's why this signing is big. We don't want to blow it out of proportion, but I think he checks the most boxes in terms of what they need. There's a system fit. So really, there's not much risk at all to this, and there's a lot of upside because it's a proven veteran, a stable presence who played real minutes. I know it was just 12 a game, but that's a rotation role for a good playoff team. In the Utah Jazz last season, he still got game. He's got the relationships with Westbrook, Harden, and Capella, playing experience with Westbrook and Harden. It's hard not to be optimistic on this signing. You shouldn't be thrilled about it because, after all, it is just a minimum. He is 35 years old. But at the end of the day, he checks a lot of boxes, and this is the kind of move under the radar, but it should help you avoid the type of slow start that really took a toll last season. That's what giving out this fully guaranteed deal to a guy like Tabo Cephalosha, in my opinion, does. And the Rockets, in terms of where he's at physically, they got a good look at him this week in Las Vegas playing alongside their regulars. It seems clear that Westbrook, Harden, those guys signed off, and if they're okay with it, then I'm happy. I think Tabo Cephalosha will be a really solid fit on and off the court in Houston. All right, continuing our show on this Friday, September 20th, here at Locked On Rockets. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose. We're talking about the news of the week as it pertains to the Rockets. Some good, as I explained in segment one, the one-year veteran minimum salary, the signing of Tabo Cephalosha. That feels like a very capable move for a 6'7", long, rangy defender that's had a lot of success in the NBA and has played on playoff teams in the Western Conference for much of the past decade, first Oklahoma City, most recently with the Utah Jazz. He's solid. He's someone that if you need to play him, he's a failsafe. I don't know if he immediately goes into your rotation, but as far as having a guy like that towards the end of your bench, it makes you sleep a lot better at night if you are Mike D'Antoni, that if something goes wrong with an injury or whatever happens to someone in your rotation, you have someone down there that has proven that they can do it. It's not like you're turning to an Isaiah Hartenstein or a Gary Clark or a Chris Clemens and hoping that they're ready. No, this is someone that you feel, worst case, now I'm not saying there's no value in playing a younger player. There is. They have more upside, but there's a higher floor with someone like Tabo, and that's why at a one-year minimum rate, it's hard not to like it. The same could go for Nene, who is back with the Rockets, as we discussed last week, on at least a one-year deal. The second year is non-guaranteed, although he needs to be waived by February 15th for that not to become guaranteed, which means whether he's with the Rockets or traded, he is likely to be waived, and at that point, if he's playing well, a buyout candidate around the NBA. At least to start the year, though, in the same vein as Cephalosha, having an insurance policy like Nene at the end of your bench, I think that's much more comforting than someone that you haven't seen. Even though Nene is 37, he's proven he can give you something that you don't necessarily know, even though he has more potential, that an Isaiah Hartenstein can provide. With that said, the Nene signing, well, he's still a solid veteran, although some of the upside's limited because you'd have to make a decision on him roster-wise, probably release him by February 15th, not to give a guarantee for the second year of the contract. But we were certainly hoping, at least, that Nene's return to the Rockets was going to be for more than just his value as a basketball player. That's because of, well, the terms of the contract, which we learned last week, the creative bonus structure, in which even though the Rockets use bird rights, and that's key because with bird rights, Nene's been in Houston for basically the last three seasons, averaging about 7 points, four rebounds a game in 15 minutes as Clint Capella's backup. Because they had his bird rights, they could theoretically pay him just about anything. Well, they gave him a base at about $2.6 million, which amounts to the minimum, but then incentives tied to games played and team wins that could take it up to $10 million. And because both Nene and the team hit those figures last year by the league's collective bargaining agreement, the CBA, those would be deemed likely and thus included in his outgoing salary should he be traded, even though he ultimately would most likely not be paid that money. Of course, bonuses aren't paid until after the season, and especially with the team wins component, be it the Rockets or another team acquiring him, there's a pretty easy exit strategy. You just trade him at the deadline to a bad team, like say the Chicago Bulls, same way we saw the Rockets do with Michael Carter-Williams and Carmelo Anthony a year ago, and then because the team would not have 52 wins, Nene would not have gotten those bonuses. And of course, Nene knew that when he signed the contract. It doesn't take a genius to look at the terms and figure it out, even if the Rockets weren't open with him, and I'm pretty confident they were. Anyway, the downside, news leaked Thursday afternoon, first reported by Shams Charania of The Athletic, that the NBA is not including, even though by their own CBA, it says those bonuses should be considered likely because Nene achieved them. He played 42 games last year. It was a tiered bonus, 10, 25, and 40 games played. Nene would have achieved all of them based on his production last year, playing 42 games. Also, the Rockets won 53 as a team, so the 52 win total, there's reason to expect that as likely as well. But apparently, the NBA, jointly with the Players Association, decided that this was circumvention of the salary cap and decided to only count the base of $2.6 million in outgoing salary as far as trades go down the line. And it's disappointing for the Rockets in that obviously because he only counts as about $2.6 million in outgoing salary rather than $10 million, it's harder to make the math work for a true mid-tier salary in that, say, $10 to $15 million range. Now, one thing that should be pointed out, the fully guaranteed salary of Nene, if you combine that, say, with the fully guaranteed veteran minimum to Thabo Sefolosha, also a veteran, while it's not truly mid-tier, at the same time, you're over $5 million between the two of them combined. Maybe you throw in an Isaiah Hartenstein. You can get to $7 or $8 million, which certainly isn't as nice as the old Nene contract at $10 million would have been, but it does give you an option. That's why, you know, I referenced Thabo. I don't know if he's a fit for the playoff rotation. We'll have to see how he plays. There's a long way to go, but at least certainly to start the year, the presence of veterans like Thabo and Nene, they help you sleep a little bit better at night if you're Mike D'Antoni in terms of their value as insurance policies. And even though it's a veteran minimum at their level of NBA experience, because you're talking about $2.5 million more than that in the case of Nene, then that can give you, and I believe Thabo as well, yeah, because he's in year 14, that can add up pretty quickly. So there is some value still left. I don't want to act like it's insignificant, and I don't think there's going to be too much of a premium because, sure, the team acquiring Nene might need to then trade him again if they're going to win 52 games because no one actually wants to pay him those higher bonuses. The NBA left those in the contract, effectively approving the contract, but not allowing it to count as outgoing salary. Now, perhaps they could have gone back to the Rockets. This is something that bothers me as well. I don't think the Rockets would have walked away from Nene, but I think they probably would have preferred just to give him a clean minimum without the bonuses, because the only point of the bonuses was to get that higher outgoing salary for potential trade matching purposes. Anyway, it is what it is. The deal is done. Nene is with the Rockets. He still has some value in terms of both his production as a 2A, 2B backup center with Tyson Chandler to start the year. And even though he's making the minimum, that higher veteran minimum, same with Thabo Sefolosha, you can use that to match salaries down the line. However, it's certainly a hit. You don't have the flexibility that you were hoping for with regards to the $10 million in outgoing salary. I also suspect that this might have had to do with Iman Shumpert turning his attention elsewhere, because one of the reports on Tuesday, when we learned that Shumpert allegedly declined the Rockets' offer and was looking elsewhere, there was a writer with Amico Hoops who pointed out, who said that the Rockets apparently reneged on part of their offer, and he didn't elaborate further on what that was. Maybe he personally didn't know, but it wouldn't be shocking if the Rockets were offering Shumpert the same type of deal that they did Nene, but then learned that once the Nene wasn't going to be approved, what's really the point? And perhaps that's what sent the negotiations south between the Rockets and Iman Shumpert. I don't know if we'll ever know that for a fact. Of course, these things are handled behind closed doors. Now, the Rockets do still have Shumpert's bird rights, so in theory, they could pay $10, $15 million, whatever it is, to have him as a mid-tier salary. I just doubt they're going to do that, because if they were going to do that, they would have acquired Patrick Patterson back in the Westbrook trade. We've talked about that earlier this summer. It doesn't seem that Tillman Fertitta is willing to write a blank check just for salary filler. He wants to have more certainty, and that's where the Nene deal was so genius, because you would have had the upside of potentially $10 million in salary filler, but without the massive salary commitment on the part of the Rockets. So while in theory they could recoup that by simply using bird rights to give Shumpert a larger deal, I doubt that actually happens, because what the Rockets were wanting is this middle ground where they could get that upside, but also not be on the hook for paying that much in salary. And then, of course, the associated luxury tax impact now that the Rockets are tracking to be most likely a luxury tax team. That's what Daryl Morey said in his interview with Jonathan Fagan, The Chronicle. He expects the Rockets to be above the tax this year, and they're operating as such. Even though at the moment there's a path for them to be below, ultimately that seems unlikely, and we'll talk more about that Morey interview in just a few moments. Anyway, as far as the Nene contract, it is a hit. It's not devastating, but it limits the flexibility. What's most frustrating about it to me is that it seems so easily preventable. This was something that I generally think the NBA league office, led by Adam Silver, is much more progressive and transparent than their counterparts with MLB or the NFL. This was one that to me is a mistake, not just because it negatively impacts the Rockets, but it sets a very tricky precedent moving forward that effectively using the CBA version of an executive order, that a deal that was completely legal within the collective bargaining agreement, the incentives were deemed as likely, and thus because they're likely, they're included as part of the trade value. Everything was within the terms of the CBA, call it a loophole if you want, but it was 100% legal, and then overturning it without modifying the collective bargaining agreement. That sets a very tricky precedent. Now, of course, there have been other incentive situations. Look at the Brooklyn Nets with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant this summer that you could point to. Something about the Rockets seems a little different. Maybe there's some hard feelings because, of course, we know the Rockets, the officiating, the leaks of the data in the playoffs. I don't know if it's fair to go to that length. I think in this case, the Nene situation was a little more alarming because of how brazen it was in terms of a guy willingly making himself a human trade exception, quote unquote, for the sake of his team and basically giving himself up however the GM sees fit to help give that team the best shot at a championship. I think this was unique, but it should have been dealt with in the next round of CBA negotiations. It's really not that dissimilar to the wave of non-guaranteed contracts, and this was an unintended consequence of the CBA a few years ago. I believe it was after the lockout, and some GMs realized the value in giving out these huge non-guaranteeds for trade purposes, which effectively operated the same way. You could send out potentially this much money, even though the team acquiring that salary would not actually have to pay it. It's a very similar principle here. However, the NBA did not override that with an executive order. They did that in collectively bargained negotiations. What's frustrating about this, besides the fact that it does limit the Rockets' flexibility a little bit, if you're another executive or team around the NBA, if you're a fan, I don't know how you can't expect or want the NBA to use that same standard that unilateral, well, I know they had buy-in from the Players Association, but we'll say the NBA and MBPA collectively in this case. I don't know why you wouldn't expect them to use that same heavy-handed style in other areas. One example I pointed out on Twitter, not because it's the same situation, no, not at all, but the Warriors adding Kevin Durant in 2016, the 73-win Warriors. Now, was that the same type of contract as Nene? Not even close. The reason I bring up that example, it was an unintended consequence that was not foreseen in terms of the massive cap explosion, the spike in player salaries. Of course, the MBPA declined a smoothing proposal, but the spirit of the CBA, which in large part was written because they didn't want stars to be able to team up that easily, the spirit of the CBA was not for a team that just won a record 73 games to be able to fit in a max salary by only offloading Andrew Bogut and Harrison Barnes. That's not the spirit of the CBA. This was a one-time historic event, that cap spike. And of course, they tried to offer a smoothing proposal to the union, which declined it. But if you're going to say that you can just cry circumvention and override the salary cap for one thing, or override the collective bargaining agreement, excuse me, if you're going to say you can do it for this, why can't you do it for something else? It's a very slippery slope. And that's the issue that I have with it. It's not so much the specifics of this situation. Look, the Nene contract, that's very unique, the so-called human trade exception. But there's going to be something else that happens a couple of years down the line. You know, this is the latest wave. The other was the non-guaranteed contracts of a couple of years ago that I was just discussing. And then 2 or 3 years from now, some smart GM, it might be Daryl Morey, it might be someone else, is going to find something else that they can exploit. There's always going to be something. What you want is consistency and transparency. In the past, the NBA has been pretty good about, and you know, as much as it sucked to see Kevin Durant join the 73-win Warriors, and it probably cost the Rockets at least one championship, I'm not saying that he should not have been allowed to do that. I am not suggesting that the NBA should have stepped in. What I am saying is that when you rule in this heavy-handed of a fashion without renegotiating the collective bargaining agreement to basically say, hey, even though this is completely legal, basically it makes us uncomfortable, so I'm going to cry circumvention. And of course, there's no clear definition on what that is, and basically use what amounts to their version of an executive order to push it through without any negotiating process or without even writing out what it is or what the policy is that the Rockets allegedly broke in this case. That sets a very dangerous precedent that when something else happens, that's clearly not within the spirit of the collective bargaining agreement. That's why I referenced the Warriors-Durant example. No, it's not even close to the same in terms of what the cap mechanisms were to allow it to happen relative to Nene. No, but I think the spirit of the collective bargaining agreement, no one was wanting a team like the Warriors to be able to add an MVP on top of a 73-win group. It was not meant, the CBA, for stars to be able to team up like that. That was a one-time, just historic series of events that led to it. Well, after the NBA showed that even when deals that are legal under the CBA, if all it takes to not allow them is to basically claim circumvention without any sort of public explanation as to why or how or who, basically how the decision came to be, how are other teams and how are fans the next time there's something that clearly is not the way the CBA was intended when it was negotiated, how are fans, other teams, whoever it may be, not going to ask for the league to similarly step in with a heavy hand? It's certainly within their right, and I want to make clear, the collective bargaining agreement, it gives the NBA the right. Basically, if they consider it circumvention, they can use that argument and almost unilaterally overturn it. It's their league. This is 100% legal. They can do what they want. However, as I say a lot on Twitter, at Ben DuBose, just because something's a rule, just because something's legal, doesn't mean you have to like it. And beyond just the impact on the Rockets, I think the NBA is going to end up regretting this decision, because what's going to happen every time, and I don't know if they're going to rule the same way in the future, they could adjust it, we'll see, but I think ultimately they're going to regret this precedent, because now every time some GM does something to take advantage of a loophole or an unintended result of the salary cap, you're going to have other teams, executive fans, that are now asking the NBA to step in since they set this precedent. That's what I think they're going to regret. Of course, it's their right. As in any organization, there's always some degree of executive order. There's that level or component to it. That's always a possibility. But generally, when you go down that path, if you want your organization to be successful, you want to be very open and transparent about how, when, and what those special situations are. For the NBA to do it this loosely, to basically just leak to Shams, and I saw Tim Frank, the NBA's PR guy, just have a couple of sentences to Jonathan Fagan of the Chronicle. If you're going to do it, it needs to be a lot more transparent about how the process came to be, why this is so different than other situations in the past, and what could be in the future. Because right now, without knowing that, the next time there's something that goes against the spirit of the CBA, as a fan, I'm going to wonder, okay, will the NBA step in? Even though it's legal, they stepped in here. Why won't they somewhere else? That's why, beyond just the fact that it hurts the Rockets, I just think for the league as a whole, this was a mistake. It is what it is. I'm happy to have Nene back. He's a productive player. But the $10 million in trade filler, that component of his contract is gone. Daryl Morey didn't get his way. It's unfortunate for the Rockets. It limits some of their flexibility down the road. But I also think it's unfortunate for the NBA as a whole. Time will tell, of course, if I'm right on that aspect. Okay, final thoughts here at Locked On Rockets on this Friday, September 20th. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose. We spent the first couple of segments discussing the good and the bad of the last 2 days. The good, signing Thabo Sefolosha, proven veteran defender, filling out your rotation, or at least your bench. We'll see if he's in the rotation. He might be in that Iman Shumpert hybrid spot. And then in the second segment, we looked at the bad. Well, Nay is back. That's still a good thing. Even at 37 years old, you're 18, he's a capable center. But the NBA choosing not to allow the enhanced trade value of his contract, that creative bonus structure, that won't go through. Now, the contract is being allowed to stand, which means the Rockets or any team that acquires Nene are going to have to deal with that pesky bonus situation, which, of course, limits the likelihood that Nene finishes the season with the Rockets or whatever contender he's on that would win 52-plus games. But, of course, with the Rockets having signed Tyson Chandler in the offseason, that's not really a huge deal. The Rockets should have Nene at least through the deadline, and I think he'll be a capable player and a veteran presence at the end of their bench. That's the good. The bad, well, the NBA declined to allow the bonuses, or at least the trade value of those bonuses, to stand up, so the Rockets don't have that enhanced flexibility in terms of filler salary that we thought. And beyond just the negative effect on the Rockets, I think it's a bad precedent for the league as a whole, but time will tell. That's something that's more years away than it is near term. In terms of the next few weeks, gearing up for the 2019-2020 season, I want to finish up the podcast being a little more positive, or at least immediate, because it's not all positive, depending on your perspective. But one thing we learned Thursday, aside from the Nene news, Daryl Morey did a Q&A with Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle. And in that interview, Fagan asked Daryl about a potential extension for PJ Tucker, who said in August that he wanted one. He's basically got 2 years left on his contract, but the last year, 2020-2021, he's making about $8 to $9 million a year, but the last year is only partially guaranteed at about, I think, just $3.5 million, a pretty low rate. Well, Daryl, in the interview with Fagan, basically says that it's not going to happen. He says that he's not expecting any more extensions this offseason, that generally they just give extensions when a player has 1 year left on his contract, as Eric Gordon did when the Rockets gave him that extension in August. The reason they had to with Eric, there was a time crunch because, well, if you're potentially looking at him becoming a free agent next summer and walking for no compensation, then you need to figure out if he's in or if he's out. And if he's out, then you may have to consider trading him because he's too valuable to lose for nothing. With PJ being under contract for 2 more years and being 34 years old, I know he's a good player. He's beloved. He's a leader. He's tough. We know what he brings defensively. Mike D'Antoni calls him one of the best players in the league. With all that said, he's 34 years old. He's got 2 more years left under contract, and the list of guys that continue at a starting level in the NBA, which is certainly what he would want an extension to be, I'm guessing, the guys that continue as a starting quality player at age 36 and after, it's pretty small. So you can see why the Rockets are saying, and also in that answer to Fagan, Morey says that they generally only give extensions with 2+ years left to guys like James Harden, clear superstars. Otherwise, if it's a role player, which PJ definitely is, a very good one, but still a role player, it's 1 year out the way they were with Eric, and PJ is contractually obligated to the team for 2 more years. So when you take a step back, I know PJ wants an extension, and now that you have Capella, Westbrook, Harden, Gordon all under contract for at least 3 more years, it's natural to say, hey, let's buy into our core. And Daniel House is under contract for 3 more years too. So I get at first glance why you might think, hey, let's lock up Tucker to the same years as the rest of those guys and everybody can buy in. But the reality, when you really take a step back, I think Daryl Morey is right in this decision, in that PJ Tucker does not have a lot of leverage here. The Rockets have a lot more to lose than they do to gain. They would still have his bird rights no matter what. They'll still have an extension window next summer. PJ's a professional. He doesn't seem the type to pout and for some reason not play as well because of whatever's going on off the court in regards to his contract. He's as professional a guy as I've come across in my time covering the NBA. There's just not a lot to gain, in my opinion, but there's a lot to lose if he does ultimately slow down. And we know Father Time stops for no one. If you're giving guys extensions through age 36, age 37, unnecessarily, that stuff can come back to bite you. So that's why I think the Rockets aren't giving this extension to PJ. Now, Daryl did concede, or he didn't rule out. He basically said, I'm not going to announce it in the Q&A, but the next question from Fagan was, would you fully guarantee the last year of the contract, which would seem to be kind of a good faith compromise. Look, we're not going to give you the extension. We don't want to set the precedent of renegotiating deals 2 years out, but we will fully guarantee for worst case scenarios that last year. I think he's proven enough, PJ that is, to be worth that. And I think that's a good faith gesture that on behalf of the organization to show their appreciation for how great he's been his first 2 years in Houston. And Daryl Morey did not rule that out at all. He basically just said, that's between me and Tucker's representation, and I'm not going to break stuff in a Q&A. So that could still happen. When we say no contract extension, it doesn't mean that nothing is going to happen. They could still fully guarantee that final year, the fourth and final year, but basically at this point, it's the 2020-2021 NBA season of his contract. I think that's a reasonable compromise. But beyond that, I know on paper, you'd like to see all of your players under contract when you feel as good about a team as most Rockets fans seem to about this current group. I know in a perfect world, you'd have all these guys feeling great about their contracts, get the best chemistry possible. But the reality for the Rockets and PJ, given that going beyond the 2020-21 season would require paying him into his age 36 and age 37 seasons, there's just too much risk and really not all that much reward. So as much as we'd love to see PJ get paid, and hopefully he continues to play well, if he does, I have no doubt that the Rockets will keep him. They'll have his bird rights. But 2 years out, that's just too soon. And that's why, you know, when I thought about it the last few weeks, it just didn't make sense to me to go beyond the years, the terms of his existing contract. But Daryl Morey basically confirms that to Jonathan Fagan. Probably a little bit of a tough pill to swallow for PJ and his representation. He's played his butt off. I think he's earned it. But the reality that Daryl Morey has to consider, there's not a very long list of players that have been starter quality to age 36 and beyond. Hopefully PJ's the exception. We'll all be rooting for him. But to bet on that 2 years out, that seems a little extreme. I think the more reasonable compromise, what I hope happens, fully guarantee that final year, which is the 2020-2021 season, and then if he has a good year this year, renegotiate next summer about potential years beyond that. At that point, you'll only be only 1 year out as opposed to the multiple that you are at this current moment in September 2019. The other guy in the interview that apparently will not be getting a contract extension is head coach Mike D'Antoni. Morey confirming to Fagan, and of course, all of this can change with one phone call. Have to throw out that caveat, but at this point, the Rockets intend to pick up the negotiations on again, off again, this entire offseason. Contract talks with Mike D'Antoni, apparently, according to Morey, in Thursday's story with the Chronicle, they won't be resumed, the negotiations, at least they're not planning to, until next offseason. So D'Antoni will enter this year in the fourth and final year of the contract that he signed in 2016. I've said this before, so I won't spend too much time on it, but this is one that I agree with from the Rockets' perspective as well. I think there's more to lose for Mike D'Antoni than there is for the Rockets. Now, certainly, if D'Antoni goes out and the Rockets are contenders, we all hope they win a championship, then yeah, he'll have a lot of leverage in negotiations. But number one, if they're that good, I'm pretty sure the Rockets are going to be bringing in a ton of revenue and they'll have no hesitation to cut the appropriate check. If it's somewhere in the middle ground, I'm not sure how much outside leverage that Mike D'Antoni will really have. He's going to be 69 years old next offseason when he would theoretically be a free agent as far as not having a coaching contract moving forward. I don't know how many teams he makes sense for, because for most of the league that isn't contending, you don't want to hire a guy who's going to retire in 2 or 3 years, because by that point, that's how long it takes you to actually contend, and then you're having to bring in a new system anyway, especially a guy with principles as fairly unique as Mike D'Antoni. Now, I know some teams are taking on more of those principles, but he's still a bit of an outlier when you look at especially the three-point shooting relative to most other teams around the NBA. I just don't think there's really that much in the way of downside for the Rockets, because if it's in this middle ground, number one, it'd be kind of a disappointing year. You have all this talent in Westbrook and Harden. If it's not a slam dunk decision for the Rockets to bring back D'Antoni, I'm not really sure how much outside interest he would have anyway, especially when you combine it with his advanced age. And then if the Rockets do have a great year, well, they should bring in enough revenue that it's not really hard to retain him. And I certainly don't think that Mike D'Antoni would want to walk away if they go out and have a great year. So realistically, I think D'Antoni's the one with the most to lose here. You know, even this season, if for some reason things go haywire, they get off to a slow start, it's pretty easy, a coach that you don't have any long-term money committed to midway through, like the Cleveland Cavaliers with David Blatt and Tyronn Lue, to say, hey, we want to go a different direction. I'm not saying the Rockets should do that. I don't think the Rockets will do that. Mike D'Antoni deserves respect. He has the highest winning percentage regular season and playoffs in Rockets franchise history. He's been really, really good. The reason I bring that up is just in the context of negotiations. I just don't think D'Antoni, at his age, is going to have that much in the way of outside leverage to really pressure the Rockets next offseason, unless the team just has a great year. And if the team has a great year, guess what? They're going to bring in a ton of money, the vibes are going to be great, and they'll figure out a way that retains him moving forward. And if it's somewhere in the middle ground, I'm not saying the Rockets have to decide that they want to move on from D'Antoni, but I think that combined with his age, that's really going to reduce his outside leverage. So the Rockets tried, but apparently D'Antoni and its representation, they resisted whatever financial offers there were earlier this offseason. And just in my opinion, there's not really a case for why the Rockets should go above and beyond in terms of their financial offer to keep Mike D'Antoni right now, because I just don't see a scenario where it's realistic that he walks away. I think D'Antoni has more to lose. And certainly, you know, at his age, I think he's made enough money in his career. When I say more to lose, we talk financially. Maybe with him about to turn 70, maybe that stuff isn't quite as important to him, the amount of the guarantees moving forward, as it is to a lot of coaches. So because of that, maybe this is just a unique situation all around in which both parties are more content to go year to year than a lot of situations with coaches around the NBA where you need more stability. Maybe in this case, the market forces just aren't there to prompt a deal. But it's hard to argue with the Rockets in terms of not going above and beyond to give Mike D'Antoni whatever financial deal that he's seeking with his agent, Warren Legere. At this point, I think D'Antoni, at least financially, is the one with the most to lose. The Rockets next summer, they should be in a fine position no matter what. And if the Rockets have a bad year, then it gives you more options if you want to go a different direction as well. So as awkward as it is, D'Antoni said it won't be a distraction. And when you actually look at the mechanisms of the contract, the negotiations, I tend to agree. I don't think it's a distraction for the Rockets at all. I guess it could be for D'Antoni, but he seems pretty comfortable in his own skin at 68 years old. And even though it's an odd situation, you don't see too many contenders having so-called lame duck coaches. Ultimately, I don't really see anything to be concerned about. It gives the Rockets options. I think they'll be able to keep him if things go well. And if things don't, then number one, I don't know how much outside leverage he has, even as a free agent. And number two, it gives the Rockets even more financial freedom to potentially go a different direction. So even though, of course, everybody likes the players and coaches on this team, or I feel like most of you do, PJ Tucker, Mike D'Antoni, in a perfect world, I think those guys would have gotten contract extensions this offseason. It didn't happen. And as far as I can tell, for the long-term outlook of the Rockets, that's not something to worry about. If anything, I think it's a positive the way things are going to play out in terms of the flexibility the Rockets have at those positions moving forward. Anyway, I think that's where we'll break things on this Friday, September 20th. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. And if you want more content for our next show, the best place, of course, social media. Twitter, I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Beyond that, though, Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. Website, LockedOnRockets.com. Email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. all of those ways you can consume content about the Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team. You can even make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to improve this experience. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate this show if you have not already, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcast, please subscribe, give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes delivered straight to your inbox, even before I can post them to my aforementioned social media outlets. And we get the benefit, hopefully with your subscription and 5-star review, of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping the business model rolling as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. For this Friday, September 20th episode, this is where we break. As always, thanks so much for listening, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.